Good evening. I'm going to call the Zone 3 Advisory Committee to order the agenda Thursday, July 18th, 2019. And can we go ahead and have roll call, please?
Member Gibson?
Present.
Member Talley?
Here.
Member Hageman?
Here.
Member Barnage?
Here.
Member Guthrie?
Here.
All right.
And then do we need to make note of the absences, the people that are absent, or not necessarily?
No. I think it's obvious, but
we, have a quorum.
We can say
okay.
it.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yep. Okay.
Okay.
All righty. And so item number two is public comment. Is there anyone from the audience that would like to provide any public comment this evening? Okay. Seeing none, we'll move on to officer rotations, which is item number three. And the first item is committee chair rotating from at member at large to City of Arroyo Grande rep, and also the committee vice chair rotating from the City of Arroyo Grande to the City of Grover Beach.
So that would be member Barnage as now the chair and member Guthrie is the vice.
No,
did I just say that wrong?
Well, you said move to Grover
oh,
Beach.
Oh,
Grover
right.
Beach.
Sorry.
Grover
no,
Beach.
Okay.
Member
so
Bright.
Member Bright.
Bright, who is not here. Okay,
yeah.
We'll get it.
Yeah.
Okay, and so there's that's we don't have to have any discussion or voting or anything that just
nope.
rotates. Okay, all right, moving on. Approval of meeting minutes. Does anyone have any input, changes, questions regarding the March 21st, 2019 meeting minutes? No?
Nope.
Okay, I will go ahead and look for a motion.
I move we approve the minutes from May 16th, or excuse me, March 21st, 2019 meeting.
Okay. I'll go ahead and second that. Any discussion?
Is it the committee's, I guess, norm if we're not at the meeting that we just abstain from the minutes?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. So I'll be abstaining.
Okay.
And my only concern, I would do that too, but then will we have a quorum to
no,
approve?
No, we will not. No, we would
so,
not. So we would need to postpone this till the next meeting in September.
Okay.
Okay. All right, so we'll defer approval of the minutes until September.
Yep, sounds good. Okay, moving on. Item number five, operations reports. And is Jill going to go ahead with the water plant operations?
Yes. I'm going to wear all the hats tonight.
Okay, all the hats.
Secretary, updater of all things. so let's go ahead and look at the reservoir storage. That's our first one here. It's your chart in the back, and nothing really notable except that you can see that we are well above the 20,000 acre foot LRRP trigger. So we're well above that. I would not expect that we would even come close to that till maybe next year, depending on how weather is this over the winter. Rainfall, you can see, was zero this month, and they predicted 0.08, so that's right in line with our predictions. Moving on to the monthly operations report, that's attachment three. The May 2019, you can see that we used the total deliveries, including state water, was 436.9 acre feet. We're steadily on the increase from March. And in June, we were at 550. So we're starting to head into our sort of our normal demands for summertime. And let's see. I wanted to point out one thing. On June, if you look at the June 2019 monthly operations report, you'll see the column on the kind of near the far left where it shows surplus. And it shows, for example, Rio Grande has 8 acre feet of surplus water available to them. This was declared on the May 14th board item where we declare the amount of surplus water available. Beginning with our July report, that we're either going to add a column or that column's name will be changed to surplus water purchased. So per the contracts, each contracting agency is to let us know if they want to purchase any surplus water. Once they make that commitment in writing, they're required to pay for it, whether they take it or not. And then, if there's any surplus water at that point that's still available because maybe it's not all taken up, we offer it again back to people. So you will see some different numbers in that column in July because Arroyo Grande, for example, is taking no surplus. Neither is CSA 12. And I believe neither. The only three agencies taking some of the surplus water are Oceano, Grover Beach, and Pismo. So you'll that column is going to look different as we move forward.
So just to be clear, is there going to be a new column so that there'll be both a surplus and a surplus purchased, or is that just the name of that single column going to change?
Well, I'm still working on, because it's a formatting issue, I add another column, obviously everything on this page will get smaller than it already is. It'll have to get kind of scrunched down, so we're still playing around with whether we add a whole nother column or not. I'm not sure. I think what's important is how much they purchased.
To be an accounting somewhere for what's left over if they don't purchase it.
Right, and I have that accounting has already been done, and I've re-offered it to everybody, and nobody took any more. So at this point, the numbers will be set for the amount that's been requested. Any that's not requested just stays behind the reservoir for next year.
Okay.
So, yes, we do account for all that water, though. And I think that's all I have to present on
well,
the...
Well, I just piggybacking on, uh-huh. on Brian's statement. So there's going to be three cities that are going to take their part of their surplus.
Yes.
So you're going to show the surplus purchased, and then are you going to show the remaining acre feet for these, because the other cities are going to stay the same. Their surplus is going to stay the same, but these three cities are going to be pulling. So are you going to show a column showing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So if they, for example, the contracts require that they take their entitlement first. So if they use up all their entitlement and there's still time at the end of the year and they decide to take their surplus, we keep track of that. That's those columns that are more in the middle of the page. And so it'll just be a simple subtraction, and we'll just keep track of how much they've used of their surplus water purchased.
Yeah, I think when you were talking about and you were debating whether to add a column, we were thinking, okay, which one are you going to take out? So that's why I was asking that is, are they
right.
going to remain the same plus one or, okay.
Yeah, I would prefer to just rename the column, but I can see how it could get kind of messy. So it may end up being two columns, one surplus available, and then surplus purchased, and then over in the far columns where it says April to present, under surplus, it would just be tracking how much of their purchased water they've used. Okay. So, yes. So, working on that as we speak.
And Jill, just kind of, I think one of the salient points, and I think I understand, but for the benefit of everyone, you have to take your entitlement water first, and then surplus water second, and so several of the agencies never get through their entitlement water in the first place, so there's no reason for them to purchase additional surplus water if they're not projecting they're going to use it.
Yeah, correct. And once you purchase it, whether you take it or not,
you bought it.
And then that gets recredited back. There's a whole formula in the contract and how that's all mathematically works out. That's all I have, I believe, on the reservoir storage. And downstream releases. We're currently at just a little bit above our minimum downstream releases at this point. We've been at, our minimum is 1.9 MGD that we release downstream for environmental and farmers, downstream users, whatever that might be. It could be farmers or the environment. We recently increased it just a tad to about 2.2. You know, our goal is to maximize its use either through groundwater recharge or the actual use of it, as opposed to sending too much down to the creek that ends up down at the ocean. So that's just something we monitor closely. Yeah, I believe that's all I have for our projected reservoir levels and the May and June monthly operations report. Does anybody have any questions?
Did you go over the, usually we get the Lopez Lake stats as far as the rainfall. I mean, I see there's some older rainfall, but the what the lake is like right now versus maybe a month ago. And
yeah, I don't have that information.
Okay.
It is on the website. I can look it up while we're, but yeah, I do not have actual today's.
Okay.
Other than the downstream releases, I do know are at 2.1. And yeah, I'm guessing reservoir storage is still hovering around 59%.
Okay.
The rainfall to date, that's a good point you made, that a rainfall year goes from July 1st to June 30th. So if you look at the June report, that will give you the total rainfall for the year. So that number will go to zero. The year to date was 28.18.
Questions for Jill on any of those numbers? Okay. All right, so moving on to item number 6, information items, and we have some new website address.
Yes, I'm happy to announce that if you look at your agenda on the very bottom of the, or on the second page, it says agendas are accessible online at, and it has www.slocounty.ca.gov, and then it's a /PW, stands for Public Works, /Zone 3. And so it is, instead of, you're going to have to, we've been entrenched with the slocountywater.org. Mm-hmm. That is still available. If you're like, you know, you accidentally go there, you will still be able to get to this. It'll link you to this website kind of automatically. But I just want to let you know, if you're interested, you can go check it out. That's where the agendas and all the things that were on the other page will be there as well.
Okay, then we have some other information items. Are those, are you going to take care of all those, Jill?
No, Christy is here. Christy Smith from Finance is here to give you a
Hello.
Little update.
Yep, Christy Smith, County Public Works Finance. I just wanted to give you a really quick heads up. I don't normally come to your July meeting, but I wanted to let you know what your fiscal year 18-19 true up will look like. I've done a quick estimate. So there have been savings in all three of our categories, the routine O&M, non-routine O&M, and capital projects. And so I'm estimating that the total credit that you guys will get back for all agencies is $370,000. So it's a nice sum. So I just wanted to mention tonight, you have a couple of options. Just be thinking about this until your next meeting. But you can just simply take your credit, offset the 1920 billing, that the second installment of the 1920 billing that's going to be due on January 1st. So you can simply just offset that with the credit. Or you can choose to maybe increase your contractor-funded reserves. And I think that subject has come up at the TAC before. So this would be a perfect opportunity if you guys, your agencies want to put a little money aside, this would be a perfect time to do that. That's all I really had, so I'll be back in September with your fourth quarter budget status update, and we can talk more about this, but I was hoping by that meeting maybe you could give me an idea of which direction you want to go, because then I'll start preparing the actual true-up billings and we can decide what to do with your money. So. Okay, any questions or comments?
I just have a quick question, Christy.
Sure.
So have you, is that new to us, or have you discussed that with the TAC at all?
The idea of putting contractor reserves
right.
aside? It's come up. I think we have mentioned it, and they have mentioned it. I think
okay.
it's come up at the last few meetings, Jill, that yeah. I've been, I
but
don't go to every meeting.
But as far as the $370,000,
no,
and that's
they
the
haven't
okay.
heard that dollar amount.
Okay.
I just put that together this week.
Okay, so. All right. Thank you for
yeah.
that. Any other questions for Christy?
Not yet. All righty, thanks.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. Oh, PG&E planned power outages. We have a verbal update on that.
Yeah, we're kind of reaching out to all the different groups that have are involved in water. throughout the county. And so I just want to let you know that we have attended a, some of our staff attended a regional meeting where PG&E presented some information on these planned power outages. Some of the interesting points is they informed us that there are two main feeds or corridors from which we get our energy, and that one of them is on Highway 46 and the other one is at Highway 58. Now, relatively speaking, those are very close together, which means they're probably in the same kind of climate, and they're going to have the same general weather patterns. What that means is that if under their criteria they determine they need to shut down, it's likely to happen to both feeds, which means our entire county will be without power. The other important point is that these outages could happen one to 3 days, could be longer. But even a one-day outage will actually equate to 3 days, because they have to go and inspect every foot of the line after the outage. So they wouldn't like re-energize for like almost 3 days. That being said, they're hoping to give us 48 hours notice, although it could be less. I guess in one instance, they've already done this somewhere. I don't know if it was Santa Maria or outside our county. They gave them 7 hours notice. So we're kind of, we need to be prepared for just about, any kind of situation. And so the way that this would likely work is PG&E would notify our Office of Emergency Services for the county. And from there, we as the Zone 3, we would contact each of the contractors we've been notified there's going to be a planned outage. And then at that point, it would be on each of the contractors to inform their customers. So that's kind of how the chain will go. I don't know a lot more than that in terms of the communication between PG&E and ourselves, but that's generally how I would expect it to go at this point. They have a wildfire plan. I think that's what it's called. What did I write? They have a plan in which, their wildfire safety plan. And I think it's available online. And in there, they outline their criteria. And I'll just run through real quick. Some of their criteria is if they had a forecast of fire danger and high wind conditions by PG&E's meteorology team. It could also be triggered by a red flag warning declared by the National Weather Service, low humidity levels, sustained winds. They also do a lot of modeling, apparently, of, I guess it's weather. I'm not exactly sure what kind of modeling, but something they've devised. So if that showed that there was a danger. And also they also look at the dry fuel on the ground and how much live vegetation in the area. So. They do have some triggers. The good news is that Lopez Water Treatment Plant has a very large generator, diesel fueled. If our tanks were full, so for example, if we had enough time, 48 hours or so, to get all the fuel tanks completely full, we would be able to continue to deliver water, maybe at a slightly reduced rate for probably up to 5 days. And I would expect this is something that each of the contractors, as a purveyor, we would assume that the word would go out and people would be asked to not water their lawns and, do all that kind of thing to kind of reduce their usage during a power outage. So we're fairly confident we could deliver this water for, 5 days. Now, if we had an hour or two's notice, our tanks might not be that full. However, we do have about 2,400 gallons of fuel storage, so it's likely that we would not need to refuel, but once every, 5 days. So we're in a really good situation in terms of some of the other systems. So I don't feel bad about that, but it's going to be inconvenient for everyone no matter what. So that's what I wanted to let you know about that, so that if each of your agencies...
Any questions?
Can we deliver state water without power?
No, there. The state water is powered up at Polonio Pass, which is also in our within our county. So it would likely also be affected by the power outage. I don't know what their capacity is. I don't know what their fuel and generator is. I imagine they do have, I mean, I can't imagine that they don't have some ability to deliver water for some period of time during a power outage, but I don't know how many days and that kind of information yet.
And then I guess my other question, I mean, as you talked about, like, communication about that, is the county or is someone taking the lead on developing sort of a communication strategy around this?
Right. So the our Office of Emergency Services is on it. This isn't unusual for, it's a different kind of a situation, but they are well-versed in general disasters and communication and how we would get the word out. As far as I know, they have a standard, communication plan that we would follow. You know, barring some other, if cell phones didn't work, I mean, you know, and then it's always hard to kind of plan, but we do have handheld radios. There would be ways to get the information out. And ideally, we're going to have, 48 hours. Now, if we had 1 hour, it's going to be tricky.
Yeah. Right.
Even 7 hours gives us enough time to get the word out. So,
thank you.
And then we invited PG&E to come to our city council meeting on Tuesday and give a presentation on this at the very start of the meeting because there's a lot of people that still have questions that we've gotten emails from people. So they'll be there presumably right at 6. So if you want to tune in, if you just want more information, it's just going to be a general discussion. I'm sure there'll be tons of questions that we're going to be asking PG&E as well. So that's this Tuesday coming up. Okay. Now we're item D, water supply contract changes. Jill?
Yeah, I haven't really mentioned this. And I just thought I wanted to give you a real brief kind of where we've been and where we're going with this. Back in 2016-17, we decided as we were experiencing the drought, it became apparent that it would be in all the contractors' best interest to somehow work to get storage in the reservoir. So right now, the way the contracts work is given an entitlement. At the end of the year, whether they use the entitlement or not, it just goes back into the reservoir for the following year. As we experienced the drought and we were in the low reservoir response plan, under the low reservoir response plan, each agency was allowed to keep for a certain period of time any water that they did not use in a single year. So they were incentivized to save water. And so at the end of the LRRP, though we didn't, most of the contractors, any stored water that they had, they lost. So this was something that kind of brought to head that we needed to investigate the possibility of changing the water supply contracts to add some element of storage to the contractors. So back in 16-17, had a consultant model our system, and we started down that path. And then we nearly ended when we came out of the LRRP and we realized that everybody was going to lose all their water, the Zone 3 TAC said, before we go down and keep moving forward on the contract changes, we need to modify the low reservoir response plan, because at that point we weren't sure. The weather patterns had changed for everyone else but ourselves, and so we started to modify the low reservoir response plan. So we kind of put the contract change modeling on the back burner. As we worked through the low reservoir response plan modifications, it became clear that our modifications that they desired were so significant that they would likely require a contract amendment, which then brought up, well, if we have to do that, we might as well go back to looking at the whole contract changes. So that's where we are today. and we're just about ready to embark on another set of modeling. And when we get to some point where it's, we've, you know, kind of brought it down to a smaller, right now it's kind of wide and large and we don't have it really nailed down, but as we move through this process, we'll come back to your board and keep you up to speed. But I just wanted to let you know that's what we've been doing on this over the last like 3 or 4 years, so.
Okay, thank you for that. Jill, any questions? Okay, then moving on to capital projects update.
Yes. So in your agenda packet, attachment 4, so as far as the top item there, the spillway assessment, we're still in a holding pattern, and we've submitted everything to DSOD, and they are inundated probably with a lot of different plans, and so we're just waiting on to hear back from them. We also, we're about 2 weeks away from submitting our emergency action plans and our inundation maps. We just last week got the new inundation maps approved by DSOD. So at this point, we need to submit that with these emergency action plans. So, and that'll be great to do that. That's a requirement that we can check off that we've done our due diligence, and then we will wait to hear what they say and whether the whole thing is approved. Let's see, the fault zone risk, that's kind of on the back burner right now. Our upgrades, our Lopez water treatment plant safety upgrades, we're still working on the next scope of safety improvements to our membrane plant or membrane area. The domestic and fire tanks, we are going to move forward with repairing our domestic water tank, and we are still determining whether what to do on as far as the fire tank, though, whether we need to, whether there's a different way to make it either less expensive than replacing it. So we're working on that. The leach field replacement is underway. Our cathodic protection survey is also in progress. And our equipment storage building, we've recently determined that the location we thought we would like to put it in is no longer going to be a good location. So we're just re-looking at where might the best place be. So other than that, we are moving along. Everything is operating well.
Okay, thank you, Jill. Any questions?
Just one question on the domestic fire tank. We retain someone to kind of give us a number on how much is necessary for fire flow. Did that?
Yes, we did do an assessment. Okay. Yeah, and then those numbers were less than what. We actually had more storage than we needed. However, the cost to, we looked at a couple different options. One might be like a fire pump where you could actually pump straight out of the reservoir. We looked at maybe sprinkling all the buildings. That might eliminate the need for the size of water tank that we have up there. So we haven't come to a conclusion yet. That's another thing that's in the process. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. When we nail it, when we get closer to what we want to, with a recommendation, we'll definitely come back and let you know what that is.
Yeah. I know we're looking in Avila at cost of retrofitting an older tank.
Right.
Versus a new one. And it's, you know, if you're going to spend 75% to retrofit, it may make more sense just to.
That's almost what we're finding out.
A new one, yeah.
Yeah, that even though it would end up, we might result in having more water than we actually need, yeah. The cost to do something different might not pencil out. So,
okay, any other questions? All righty, moving on. Let's see, the action items where no Board of Supervisors action is required, we have none of those. Action items where the Board of Supervisors action is required, subsequently required, is a cloud seeding item.
Yes. So I'm happy to report that we have a board date of August 13th. We are going to be, it initially was supposed to be Initially, we were going to have it be a hearing item, but now it will be a consent item. And I wanted to bring this forward that we did submit on behalf of Zone 3, your existing chair at the time, Jim Gehring, and Brad worked to formulate a letter of support, which is included in the board letter, and that's what you have in front of you here. And one of the board item that is going forward, it is really about, it's all about Zone 3. Although the initial study on the cloud seeding included both the Salinas watershed and the Lopez watershed, there's no interest by the folks in the Salinas watershed at this time. So where the board letter is written as if this is a cloud seeding program specifically for the Lopez watershed, funded by the Zone 3 contractors, so.
Okay, any questions on that for Jill? Okay, so then we need a motion for that one.
Actually, you don't.
This we don't.
Was just, nope, okay. I just wanted to bring, I wanted you all to, we were under a different time schedule when this came out, so I didn't think I had time to bring you the letter for your endorsement. But because you had already, you supported it back on November 29th and via your budget.
This just reiterates that.
Exactly.
Yeah, good. Okay, well, glad to see that's on the agenda.
Yeah.
For the Board of Supervisors. Any other under future agenda items, anything we need to go over there?
No, I've left those items of contract changes, cloud seeding, and low reservoir response plan because those are, well, the contract changes and the low reservoir response plan, the modifying that are both kind of long-term items from time to time I need to give you an update so you can be kept up to speed. And cloud seeding as well because that's kind of a new, you know, if it's approved on August, we'll have definitely some updates on that.
All right, any committee member comments?
Actually, I just wanted to bring up another future agenda item. I've brought this up before, and I'm not sure if it's really been looked at. John Wallace has mentioned this too. I think we should do a cost-benefit analysis on the continuing operation of the terminal reservoir, as opposed to, you know, a different way to treat the water. And, you know, one of the things that kind of, I guess, reignited my interest in this is the fact that, you know, we had to prepare an inundation study just for the terminal reservoir. And quite frankly, if there were a major earthquake, that would flood, you know, a whole lot of really prime ag land in the Arroyo Grande Valley, which I happen to farm. But I just think it really kind of begs the question that, or the point that technology has really changed a lot since the late 1960s, and as I understand it, the technology exists to treat the water differently than, you know, the way that the system was designed.
All right, duly noted. I have that on there. Yes, I believe Member Gehring has also brought this up before. We just haven't had staff. It probably needs to get elevated. Like, it's going to take a lot of research. It's I do know that to not have that terminal reservoir be part of our operations generally requires some kind of legislation. And not that it's not possible. In fact, there are a couple. There's very few actual terminal reservoirs anymore in the state of California, and I do know that at least one or two, maybe 15 years ago, took forward legislation to not have to have one. But at this point, yeah, the cost benefit we would definitely want to look at because of the, you know, there's probably some environmental concerns about, you know, draining the pond and various other things, so. So certainly something worth looking into. I don't know exactly all the steps and what would be required, but we can do that.
And I acknowledge, I mean, this is going to be a big project just to even study this, but I think it's to the point where we should.
Okay.
And Jill, again, just to, so I'm on the same page. The essence is because there's body contact allowable in Lopez, so the water goes from Lake Lopez into the non-body contact.
Correct.
Terminal reservoir.
Right.
And then the water comes out of there, so.
Right, and initially when the plant was built, it was an older technology, and so because of that, they had to have the terminal reservoir. Since that time, we did the 2007 plant upgrade, and so it's probably, I think we could show that we don't need to necessarily because we have the membrane, the six racks, membrane racks, right. Which are high filtration. And to be honest, another thing that has come up from time to time, which we can revisit as well, is a whole different process at the plant utilizing ozone, which we've gone back and forth and back and forth on. You know, if we were to bring something like that online, and you know, simultaneously figure out how to bring forth the legislation so we didn't need the terminal reservoir, I think you would have a good case. So I'm sure I have a feeling we could make a good case now just with the type of plant we have. So it's certainly not impossible. I just don't know what it means to bring legislation forward exactly. I just know that that's the major step.
Okay, anyone else? No? Okay. Well, then with that, I will move for adjournment.
Thank you.